Our penultimate speaker for the day is Jonathan Cates, giving us an update on Discovery, a more comprehensive resource.
I am, as Jane says, going to talk to you a little bit about Discovery, which for the regulars here, you'll be more than aware of what that is. For the first timers too, you may well have used it before to find out information about collections we hold at the National Archives. But I'm going to talk to you about the ways it has evolved in the last 18 months or so, and also the ways it continues to change and will change again in the future. As I say, Discovery was developed in the first instance to handle all the content from TNA's catalogue and documents online, which it has done for a couple of years now. But now, anyone who logs on to Discovery will see that it also contains information about collections held not just here, but in thousands of archives across the UK and also to a limited extent beyond. So before it housed all of that information, we had a number of systems, legacy systems, which contained all of that information. We've got access to archives, the National Register of Archives, Manorial Documents Register, and the Archon Directory. Now, I'll talk about a little of these in turn. Access to archives is a service that contained collections, catalogues, full catalogues, from more than 400 contributing archive repositories. The National Register of Archives contained summary information about collections relating to British history and the people, businesses, organisations that created them. The Archon Directory, rather more straightforwardly, is effectively the yellow pages of the archives world. It tells you about where archives are, both public and private archives, that is, across the UK, and again, to a limited extent beyond. So it will give you contact information, opening times, that sort of information like that, and it links back into both the NRA and A2A. And then finally, the Manorial Documents Register, which sort of does what it says on the tin. It tells you about manorial documents, where they're located, who takes care of them. Besides some public records, manorial documents are protected by legislation, so we have to maintain this statutory register. So we have all of these systems, which are all popular. Not everyone knew about all of them. Some people used one or two or even three or four of them. But we knew that they had quite severe limitations, particularly the NRA, National Register of Archives, and MDR. Our systems were beginning to feel a bit clunky. In the case of the NRA, you have to run four or five searches to make sure that you've covered all of its contents. And similarly, the MDR doesn't have a very intuitive interface, which is sort of the opposite of how Discovery was going, we felt. A2A was a project that ran from 2000 to 2008, and obviously that's now 5, 6, 7 years ago, and so we were beginning to be concerned that the data in there wasn't being updated, and we wanted to find ways of refreshing that content and enabling more than those 400 archive services to contribute. And the Archon Directory, again, is a system which starts to look and feel a little bit dated when you compare it to some of the services that are available elsewhere on the internet. You think particularly Google Maps and so on. So, but before I talk about how we've moved these systems over to Discovery, I'm just going to talk a bit about why we have the information in the first place, what our remit is and so on. This is an extract from the Royal Warrant for the Commission on Historical Manuscripts, which in many ways is still the most relevant document for why we collect and present information about collections held elsewhere. The Historical Manuscripts Commission is, like the Public Record Office, a 19th century entity. It was appointed in 1869 to make inquiry about records in private hands, which at the time more or less meant the landed classes. In the 1940s and 50s, the warrant was extended to and called for a National Register of Archives to be established, which is in this second paragraph, where it says, "Our said commissioner shall make inquiry as to the existence and location of manuscripts, including records or archives of all kinds, of value to the study of history, other than records which are, for the time being, public records, by the virtue of the Public Records Act. And then they should record particulars of such manuscripts and records in a national register thereof. Now, in 2003, when HMC came together with the Public Record Office to form the National Archives, it was very clear that we had a remit, obviously, to continue collecting this information and making it available, which we did both through the National Register of Archives online service and also the A2A service. So it's still very much a part of how the National Archives operates, and I would also say it's captured in the Government Policy and Archives, Archives for the 21st Century, which commits to extending discovery to contain this information. So with that in mind, we set about challenging what the systems already did, what we would like them to do in the future, and to gather some requirements. And in the first instance, that really involved us talking to staff who used those services, the public and the reading rooms who used them, and crucially also the wider archive sector, for whom these resources are a key part of their service too. This can be at the level of people scrawling down notes on post-it notes and then arranging them coherently or otherwise to think about the kinds of things that we need discovery to do to service all of the requirements that the existing systems already have. And in fact, that exercise, which was conducted about 3 years ago, resulted in something like 450 separate requirements, which varied in detail from something as simple as I would like it to be easy to search up to very, very detailed functions of the Memorial Documents Register or one of the other services. So we take that, have a clear sense of the requirements. That gives us an idea of what it will take to build it. One step up from that is to start to sketch out how it might work. Again, this can happen in a very manual sense, just sketches on a page, you know, looking at how the screen should be laid out, what the home page should look like, how many boxes to have on the main page, that sort of thing. But it also happens in a more organised way with sort of functioning wireframes and prototypes with some sample data in there, so we can work it out on the screen as well. And again, all the way through that, we try and get people in the reading rooms and across the archive sector to test and make sure that we're going on the right track using those requirements as the baseline. So with all of that, skipping out many versions of what discovery looked like along the way, we arrived at the current view of the discovery after having performed a search, obviously, though. And the challenge is that it has to represent different types of data all on one screen and enable people to find those different types of data across a huge data set with more than 30 million records in it now. So over the last few years, obviously the numbers involved have gone up enormously from these different little systems that people were used to accessing. And when you're dealing with such large numbers of results, obviously it's important to be able to refine that number so that you can get to something that's useful. Of course, all 39,000 might be useful to you, but that's another story. So immediately we thought, well, what is common to all of the data? And that is that you can refine by date, and then you can also choose where the records are actually held. As you can see in this case, there are 24,000 at the National Archives, but there are 14,500 elsewhere. And you will start to perform some searches where you'll notice that there are more not held here, not physically in our custody. And then once you make the selection here, the National Archives, all of the other options that you are used to on discovery reappear. So you can select which level of the catalogue you're interested in, which government department, whether they're open or closed. And in other archives, for the moment, what that enables you then to do is to select which repository you're looking at. So you've searched for Nelson, you just want to know what's in East Sussex Record Office, and you can select it that way. And there are changes as well in the results in that it's starting to tell you things that didn't really seem relevant before because it was all here. So it tells you where it is held by King's College London. So again, you're getting a very different view to perhaps to how you were before. Of course, if you are only interested in the National Archives, or indeed Wiltshire and Swindon, you can make that choice beforehand. In the case of the National Archives, there's a box on the main search page. For other archives, you can go in via advanced search and just select that one. So if you're researching in Wiltshire, you might not be interested in what TNA have, to begin with anyway, so you can make that choice there and then. But what this also has is two separate tabs. It has the records, and then it has record creators. Now, these are the people, businesses, organisations that created records. And that information is derived from the National Register of Archives, so it will tell you something about the different classes of types of creator. And I'll come back to that in a bit. So we've got this design here, but we have to make sure that that works for everyone. Now, this tells a story about how people are accessing Discovery and our website and how that's changing. Of course, when we first were thinking about Discovery and TNA's catalogue, uniformly, more or less, people were accessing our system via a desktop PC. Increasingly, people are using their tablets and even a significant number are using their phones to access it. One of the traditional approaches would be to design a desktop website and also a mobile website, but Discovery is designed to be the same service works across all platforms. So you'll get a changing view depending on what you use, but it won't be a different website. And it has the same functions regardless of what you're using it on. So you won't get a stripped down, minimalist, less useful service on mobile. We've had to think about the way it changes with different screens and different shapes. This is the other tab that I talked about, the record creators. You usually get a much smaller number of results here. It's sort of the index to the wider collection, the wider scope of the records section. The view of one of these pages for Winston Churchill. So this is all new content which didn't used to be in Discovery and looks different to how Discovery used to function. In the case of Winston Churchill, there are 101 archival collections in 39 different repositories. And I think that's one of the things that using Discovery will alert people to is the fact that archival research might entail quite a lot of travelling if you want to really cover every base. And then on these pages, if you expand this view, often you'll get some biographical or historical information about this person or business. And it will also, where appropriate, give you links out to other resources like the Oxford Dictionary of National Biography or Bibliography of British and Irish History. And beneath that, here is the summary information about these collections. So in this case, it goes from 1 to 101, theoretically ordered from the largest contiguous collection down to the smallest. So the number 100 and 101 are individual letters and bits and pieces that have been mopped up by private collectors over the time. And it tells you what it is, where it is, gives you a reference, sometimes some publication information, and where there's an NRA number, that's actually a paper list which we have in the reading rooms here. This is our browse page, which the main landing page of browse, which has changed from how it used to be to reflect the different types of information that are in here now. So you have these record creators, which you can browse. You can browse TNA's records, you can browse records elsewhere, and you can browse all of the different archive holding repositories. Our sort of find an archive, Yellow Pages Archon replacement, which uses very much the visual styling of Discovery. It's available from the main Discovery page. And here you can select a region within the UK. Actually, I should say you can begin by searching for an archive. You can search the name, an address, including postcode if you wish. And we're available internationally. But as this disclaimer says, international archives only appear where they've been found to contain significant collections relating to British history. So as a result, the number of countries along the bottom is about 50 as opposed to 200 or so, or whatever it is that the UN recognise at the moment. That may change over time, though, as will the total number, which at the moment is about 2,500 in the UK. You get when you select an individual archive, so this is Oxfordshire History Centre, has all of the contact details and email as well. And over here, a map. You click on that map, you can then get directions to it. We have tested very many versions of the Discovery main page, including some which have more than one search box, have the date box, different tabs along the top. and for the moment, the one that tests best is the one which has just got a single search box with two little options to tick for available to download or just at TNA. However, it still remains quite a clear use case for people to have an advanced search, which means that they can pre-configure all of the filters and other details that they would like to have, which they can otherwise do after they search. And in this case, this has changed too, because it now has to reflect that it's not just the National Archives content. So you have to make a choice now whether you want all TNA or other. And again, when you select TNA or other, more options appear to you. So you might think that we've taken away some of those options just by looking at that screen, but if you click that, you'll notice that the page gets much longer and you have a lot more that you can do there. And of course, as I've just shown you the sort of main page with the map for archives, there are new pages which give you access into the content of Discovery as well. And there'll be one for the Manorial Documents Register as well, which has very specific search tools. Also, to make it easier to understand, now that it's a much more sophisticated and comprehensive system, we've done a lot of work on help and guidance, and the help pages for Discovery have been rewritten. We've also worked on providing an on-screen tutorial that can guide you around the system, which is really just to prompt you to see that there are things to click on the side. And I've done it myself, and I've seen people who are testing the system do it too, that if they're not sure what something is, a lot of people are reluctant to click on it. But really, I would just encourage you to click on everything. You can't break it. Well, you can probably break it. In fact, I regularly do. But please do and explore all the different options that are there. And we'll probably extend that to other parts of Discovery as well, so to give you instruction about how to order documents and that kind of content. I should say, of course, if you are looking at a record which is held by Wiltshire and Swindon, it will say in quite bold type that we don't have this, nor can you access it here. So please take note of that. And in fact, if you try and move on from that page, all it will do is take you to the page which has got the contact details. So you won't be able to order anything erroneously, nor should you come here thinking it's here when in fact it isn't. And then Discovery's evolved because it's visually changed a lot in the last year. It's representative of how we're trying to move towards conveying as much information as possible within Discovery, within one screen, without having to open up secondary applications. So in the case of this, which is the Will of William Shakespeare, the image viewer is now on screen, and you have the description underneath, and then at the bottom, and this is true also of records that are not held here, you have this context view, which shows you where it is in the archival hierarchy, just sort of so you can quickly get to grips with what you're looking at, where it is, and so on. And of course some subsidiary other features which are still in Discovery, which I would encourage you to look at. So you can tag records, which you can use either as a sort of personal bookkeeping or to add extra add extra content that the description lacks at the moment. So you might be able to add in some, for example, in a will. It's more or less generally catalogued according to the name of the person who's leaving the will, but the will might name many, many other individuals, so you can tag it with their names if you wanted. And then, of course, that's available to other people. And finally is what's next. We're not finished. We've closed the NRA and A2A legacy systems. They're available now solely through Discovery. What we haven't done is finally close the Manorial Documents Register and Archon. So those are the next steps in the immediate term. First of all, we have to make sure that we've tested all of the final features and we're happy with them, and also that you and other users are happy with them before we do that. But beyond that, the big piece of work ongoing is to ensure that we still fulfil our mandate and gather that information about collections held elsewhere. And to do that, we're building new tools which will enable all of those other archive services to contribute content to Discovery, which they can't easily do at the moment. It requires a lot of manual work at our end. And as I said, the A2A project, which provided the bulk of the data that's gone into Discovery, came to an end in 2008. So to enable us to pick up that momentum again, invite others who have never contributed data to us, and increase the number of results, the number of collections that are represented, we need to work on those tools. And that's what we're going to be doing over the next 12, 15 months or so. What that does mean is that gradually the amount of information in Discovery will change. You'll probably get more results rather than fewer, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the look and feel of Discovery will change radically. So hopefully at this time next year, if I give you another update or someone else does, the situation might be that we've moved on to getting new content in. And of course, in a cataloguing sense, that continues around the country in archive services. Everywhere, and hopefully we will be able to show you the results of those cataloguing projects through Discovery, rather than just in individual archives catalogues or on websites here and there. So it really does add a lot of value to researchers who are looking for all of this content. Go and look at them, look at Discovery, follow the blog, and there's the obligatory Twitter as well if you're so inclined. And that's all from me.
This podcast is copyright to the National Archives. All rights reserved.